It is Saturday, November 22nd, 2008, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on GeekSpeak, geek news and all about assistive technology. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on Geek Speak, we have Calais Engel, assistive technology instructor at Cabrillo College. We'll be talking all about technology that is used in the classroom and around the school to help assist people with disabilities. During the second half of the show, I'll welcome you to join the conversation. You can ask us anything you'd like. The numbers are you can ask us about assistive technology. I think we'll stay on topic today. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5800. Or go to geekspeak.org right now to send us an email or participate on our online forums. GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information about Henry J. Ramirez, 423-2447. This is GeekSpeak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Sean Cleveland, Senior Technical Marketing Manager at NVIDIA. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
Miles Elam. Miles Elam is a student, programmer, and political junkie. Good morning, Miles.
Good morning.
We also have Calais Engel, and you're welcome to join us with Geek News if you'd like.
Thank you.
We'll be speaking with her in about assistive technology in just a minute. So for Geek News, Miles Engel, I'll start with you.
Einstein. He's been gone for a while, but he still keeps chugging along. This series, everyone has seen and heard of the E equals MC squared equation. Energy is equal to mass times the speed of light squared.
You know, that's the most famous formula
right.
in the world. Okay.
But at the same time, with regard to science, with regard to physics, we're constantly testing these theories mm-hmm. so that we can see whether they're true or not. And it just so happens that folks were testing that E equals MC squared when they were checking for the mass or the weight of a proton or a neutron. The subatomic particles within that are three quarks.
Okay.
And when they added up the individual masses of these quarks, they only added up to about 1% of the proton or the neutron's mass.
Why?
So where'd the rest of the mass come from?
Yes.
The interaction between those subatomic particles, a tremendous amount of energy translated into an increased amount of mass.
Interesting. That much of a percentage of
mass? That much of it.
So the way the quarks actually interact has an energy value that is most of its weight. Is that the way to describe it?
Well, if you have E equals MC squared, if you put speed of light squared on one side of the equation, you have energy being energy and mass being a ratio.
Mm-hmm.
So you increase the energy and the mass increases. So they increase their energy, their mass increases. And that's what they actually found through experimental data. So chalk up another one for Einstein. His theory still stands.
A confirmation.
Yes.
Another confirmation. All right, good.
Yet another confirmation.
So now do you respect him?
Yeah, I didn't respect him before, but now I'm grudgingly coming over to that side. Yeah.
That's great. Thank you, Miles, for that update on Einstein's theories. Sean, hi.
That was the story I was going to do.
Miles, you always do that.
So that's my news.
All right, good. Miles, your turn.
Okay. Researchers.
I'm kidding. But...
Okay, go for it, Sean.
I mean, sort of kidding.
I'm going to kill you later.
No big deal. So John Petty Research put out a study that shows the worldwide PC gaming hardware market is larger than the console market.
Really?
I knew that would get surprising.
Yeah, that's normally not what we talk about. I mean, we see we're PC gamers, right? So we have PCs. That's what we high-end machines. But when we talk about the figures, most of the large figures for games being sold and stuff are the console market, which is the
right.
PlayStations, Xbox, Wii.
And we're not talking about the games.
We're not talking about the games.
We're talking about hardware here.
Right. So yeah. Is that from a financial perspective? People spend – there's more money being spent on
– No. It has nothing to do with money. We're talking about the number of systems.
Interesting.
So it's actually PC gaming market is vastly larger. 196 million PCs sold versus 74.7 million PS3s, Xbox 360s, and Wiis.
Added together. Wow. So are people gaming on those systems, though?
Well, you know, if you look at game numbers, I think that's different.
Mm-hmm.
Although the new Lich King add-on for World of Warcraft this last week was released. Sorry, I got a serious frog in my throat.
So they do seem like
and they sold like 2.5 million copies in a week, which is incredible. And I think it's the fastest selling game of all time. But you know, World of Warcraft is kind of a
okay. So
it's not like any other game. You
right?
Really
it's can't. The numbers are crazy.
I mean,
high.
To understand how the games market really is, you got to drop the World of Warcraft numbers.
Right. And that's what they normally do, actually, talk about World of Warcraft and everything else. Speaking of World of Warcraft, though, I've got a new story that's good.
Wanted to also note this study shows or believes that the PC gaming market will top $34 billion by 2012.
Wow.
Yeah, and
that's a lot of money.
This article is putting quotes around gaming PCs, specifically gaming PCs, so presumably something that has a GPU.
Yeah, right. Yeah, high-end GPU.
Graphics.
And if you want to read the report, you can go to John Petty Research, you know, plop down $5,000.
Ah, so it's an internal report. Do you have access to that through your job? Do you get to read those things?
I guess I could if I wanted to. But, you know, every time I do, I'm like...
what does it all mean?
Wait a second, John.
So in-depth.
Did you just tell people, yeah, you can go take a look at this? I really don't, but, you know.
Well, the report's going to get into the nitty-gritty.
Oh, it is so detailed, yeah.
All right, so
I want to read the high level stuff.
Speaking of World of Warcraft, or WoW, as the kids call it, Obama's FCC transition team, actually the two of the guys that are on it are big online players in virtual worlds, which is going to theoretically be very different in the way the FCC has handled some of these issues in the past. So not only are Obama's FCC transition team leaders Kevin Warbach and Susan Crawford. Great net neutrality advocates. They're also into online games, virtual worlds. And that comes from Wenger.
So we're going to see
Wenger James.
A press conference in Second Life, perhaps?
Possibly. But what's also interesting is that they sent that was kind of released and kind of been known for a while. Well, the identity of one of these guys, this guy.
It's like a
Kevin.
A pink kitty or something?
No, there's this great, Boing Boing post on it. It's basically a dissection of the character type that he is. He's playing a Minotaur, which is a half man, half bull. And he's in the Horde, which is theoretically from a perspective of good and evil. People think of the Horde as evil, but really it's much more like Empire versus small civilizations. So he's also 70th level, so it's not like he's a sometimes player. He's a heavy player. So I think that's kind of interesting. There's a whole article on that. You can find that on the GeekSpeak website.
That's Miles awesome. I see he sounds normal.
He might. Well, I don't know.
That's
I don't
normal?
Yeah, he's got an imagination.
I'll go with that.
He enjoys himself, does something besides, you know, the Beltway.
Go ahead and justify it any way you can.
Yeah. Miles,
I wish I could game like that.
Miles, your next I want to prompt you for the one the sure. Giant thing on the bottom of the ocean. Can you talk about that?
Yes. Paleontologists have
let me guess, it's Cthulhu.
No, it's not Cthulhu.
It's not that big.
Paleontologists have found have always found these trace fossils, a trace fossil being the path or the tracks of a organism, usually an early organism.
So
before they had skeletons, they didn't leave. There's nothing left behind to make a fossil.
So there's a little bit of sand, and it gets moved, and then that gets fossilized, so you know an animal was there.
Yeah, than imprints in the sand, or imprints in the mud, or imprints in a piece of rock.
Highly good research is still doing that. That's how we know Bigfoot exists. Go on.
Well, one of these oldest trace fossils dates to about 580 million years ago, and paleontologists had always figured these grooves in the sand must have been made by a multicellular organism.
Like which something then, that would have legs and such.
Right. Well, not necessarily legs and such, but a multicellular organism. And yet they're always kind of like off by this. They found these tracks, and yet there wasn't anything for a while, and then the Cambrian explosion, or pre-Cambrian, or yeah, Cambrian explosion, where you had a huge diversity of life coming up as a result. What happened recently was folks found in the bottom of the Arabian Sea a single-celled organism that was approximately 3 centimeters in diameter.
Like a large grape.
A large grape, but as a single cell, a distant relative of the amoeba. That is
a single-cell organism that makes tracks that's larger than a grape. That's big.
Yes.
How does it move?
That I couldn't get from the article. I looked it up if you asked me.
Could these tracks be made by it just being pushed along, or it must have some kind of pattern to it that looks more like a...
See, I could talk about it, and I'd still be, you know, making it up.
Let's not talk about it and pretend like you're really smart, you know everything about it.
Okay.
All right, sweet.
But what they did notice was that the tracks from the path of this creature matched almost exactly to the tracks of these trace fossils from 580 million years ago.
So it wasn't a multicelled organism.
Right, which means that they don't have to worry about it was multicellular, then there was nothing, and then there was this explosion of diversity of life.
So then we're thinking that there was no multicellular until that Precambrian explosion, and that's when multicellular happened, and that's when you started having massive evolution growth and all that.
Right.
Very cool.
The idea is that it's now upending the early evolutionary theories and going, oh, hey, well, maybe this does make sense. This is, we have an example.
Yeah. Okay.
So this now constitutes the world's oldest living fossil.
All right. Thank you very much. Sean, one more news story for today, sir.
Wow. I have a ton.
I know, but we've got a guest. We're going to get to it.
Yeah. Well, your PC Magazine is going 100% digital.
I was surprised.
Yep.
I have a subscription.
Why are they doing that?
So, they can't compete in print anymore.
Right.
They're not making money.
So what are they doing for people who have subscriptions?
They're going, yeah, I don't know.
Because
too bad.
Because I've seen their online articles. Their online articles are available for free. So
yeah.
There's a big article. We'll post a link to it. And they talk about the benefits of going digital and how they've been setting this up for the last 3 years and how they're going to be just as great as they ever were. But the details I don't think have come out yet.
They didn't tell me that when they asked me to renew my 2-year subscription, though.
Well, it's very possible they'll still have paid for content. You'll just only be able to get to it online.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would assume that's the way it's going to be, going to work.
There's a new study that shows online use is good for teens.
You're trying to sneak in a second story to the same blog. Okay. Nice.
No, teens want to hear that.
So
it says they are learning the technological skills and literacy needed for the contemporary world. They're learning how to communicate online, craft a public identity, create a homepage, post links. All of these were regarded as sophisticated 10 years ago, but now they're taken for granted.
But they're still writing LOL.
Yeah, could I make a suggestion for teens?
Please.
Never use an email address that's going to be embarrassing when you have to submit it to your English 1A instructor. Don't do that.
Miles, she's talking to you, horn dog, at UCSC.
No, actually, that was for computer science. My English professors at the time at UCSC never used computers. It was,
okay.
Unless
so
you were doing word
processing. So is it okay at computer science?
God, that's a throwback there.
Did you have an inappropriate... Yeah well, you don't use that email address anymore.
Right. And I did... remember thinking, well, I'll use this login because I'm never going to have a class where I do this. And then I sign up for a computer science class, put down my email address, and actually had a professor circle it and put an unhappy face next to it. And at the same time, I was kind of thinking, like, what's it to you? I still got an A on the test.
So last week, you're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The Geeks today, Sean Cleveland and Miles Elam. Last week, at the end of the show, we didn't get to Romido from Santa Cruz. And the question that he had to do with Vista or XP for adaptive technology. And we're going to get into what that means in just our assistive technology. And then we'll get into that what just that means in a second. So what we decided was, you know, let's answer this correctly. Let's really talk about this kind of technology. So Rick, our producer, called Callie Engel. She teaches assistive technology classes and directs the assistive technology lab at Cabrillo College. She's an important advocate for the technology needs of students with disabilities, from technology accommodations to web accessibility. Callie, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here today. So what the heck, what's this assistive technology term? Why are we using that, assistive technology?
Assistive technology is defined by the federal government in the Tech Act of 1988, in case you're ever curious. Assistive technology is hardware or software or some combination of system which provides more functionality for a specific disability.
Okay, so it is for people with disabilities.
Yes.
Technology. That's examples of this text-to-speech, speech-to-text.
Yep. Screen readers, speech recognition.
Would it also be, and magnification systems?
Yes.
And would it also be for, you know, like those, like wheelchairs and things of that nature? Or is that
different
scope?
Well, you get into ergonomics there, like having an adjustable workstation where a wheelchair can roll up underneath. Yeah.
Are you kind of an expert in that kind of stuff as well?
We do that too.
Uh-huh. What about the driving, you know, electronic robotic wheelchairs with driving sticks or devices that help you pen key pressing, things that kind of help augment the body a little bit?
Well, that falls more under rehabilitation engineering.
Okay.
And those are more personal devices. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't really fall into assistive technology.
It's so specific to the individual that they have to kind of own that technology. They can't just come into a lab and use it.
Right.
Okay, so that's kind of the boundary of what we're talking about. And then I've also heard the term adaptive technology. What's that?
Or adaptive computing.
Yeah.
That refers more to personal selections. Like you might say, oh, I'm typing at my keyboard. It's not that comfortable. I'm going to get a gel wrist rest. And you've just adapted your computer for your needs.
Okay.
Yeah. Where assistive technology, there's funding tied to that term, and it's acknowledged within the field as meaning specific hardware, software, and sometimes ergonomics, which gives more function around a specific issue or disability.
Okay. Your lab set up, there's a picture on our website, mm-hmm. but it's basically, it looks like a computer lab. It isn't very
Thank
much
you.
Different.
I worked hard on that.
Does it, so large screens, I'm assuming, large
yes.
monitors? And the software you're using, you mentioned a couple mm-hmm. of them, but JAWS is one of these ones that I mm-hmm. talk about a lot because I do web development, and we're always talking about, can you describe what JAWS is?
Sure. JAWS is a screen reader. Now, JAWS stands for Job Access with Speech because it was developed with a grant to help provide employment for people who are blind. And what JAWS does is it reads what's on the screen out loud, typically top to bottom, left to right. And because a person who's blind cannot use a mouse, because they're not going to see the mouse pointer on the screen, you also use specific program keyboard commands to make it work.
Well, let's try it out. Do you mind?
I can give it a shot. I've got a demo here on my laptop, which I think is going to go through.
Okay. So JAWS, an application you run in Windows, and it looks like you're running Vista.
I am.
Start button to open, press enter.
Can you turn your volume up a little bit on your computer?
Sure.
See how this goes.
Is that working?
Sure, it's working. Go ahead. It's a little messy.
Okay, so I'm going to press the Windows key to open the start menu.
Okay.
Menu, start search, edit. To move through items, press up or down arrow.
So what it did there is it told me if I want to move through the items in the start menu, I press the up or down arrow. Because if I can't see, I'm not going to know what's happening in that start menu.
Mm-hmm.
So I could do that, or I could just hit I for Internet Explorer, M for Mozilla Firefox, or something like that. Let's see.
All programs submenu A, Acrobat.com 1 of 33.
That told me where the focus was.
I, Internet Explorer 1, 4 of 33.
So I'm going to press enter in order to open Internet Explorer.
Enter, leaving menus, Windows Internet Explorer 1%, 100%.
That meant it was starting and then it means
19 links. Geekspeak-Cusp 88.9 FM Central Coast Public Radio. Visited link /geek.
Okay, I'll stop there. So what it did is it told me we opened Internet Explorer. The home page I just said is geekspeak.org. It read the tab, and then it would start reading the page unless I stop it and ask it for something specific, like a heading or a list of the links on the page.
Yeah, I think we'll stop doing it there because I'm a little concerned that the quality is high enough for our connection and all that. So people are able to navigate without any site websites.
Yes.
How good are websites at actually providing the right kind of input, and what kind of things need to happen for a website to be good?
Of course, it really depends. A site that's all Flash might be very difficult to access, but something which is written in straight HTML that's very straightforward with headings and links which are named in a way that you can understand them, that's no problem. You know, something that says click here is going to be a problem because you're going to hear it out of context and go, click where? But
this is one of those arguments I tell people all the time. When you're making web content, never use the term click here. Really use phrase it in such a way that the sentence actually describes something that you're actually going to, and that thing that it describes is the link.
Yes.
And you can kind of tell people and know what they're doing because of that feature, and that's the reason. That's the main reason for it. The other thing has to do with Google ranking, so it's actually better to represent your links in a way that Google can actually see meaning in the link that you're choosing to link to. Okay, so that's JAWS in a nutshell. You said Flash doesn't really work. Does it read Flash content?
It can, depending upon how the Flash is, I guess, tagged. I don't develop in Flash, so I couldn't speak to it.
You try to avoid it.
I do. You know, I come from the user side, not the programming side.
Yeah. So okay, yeah. So that's one side. That's the reading stuff on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
You can navigate your whole computer with that. You can read your email, the whole deal.
Yes.
So that's for a completely blind person or someone who has the site so diminished that a monitor really of any size isn't really going to help
them out. It's not functional.
I've got a friend that has low sight ability and normally just sets all his magnification up really high, like everything's larger.
Mm-hmm.
And you run in sometimes where the application or the website can't really do that effectively. It kind of breaks the design. But you were showing me before this kind of zoom feature.
Yeah.
What was that application you were using?
Well, the idea there is called screen magnification, and that you can magnify what's on the screen in various ways. For example, just within a lens or the entire screen. And you can buy different screen magnification products. Magic is one that goes with JAWS from Freedom Scientific, but the one we use a lot at Cabrillo is called Zoom Text. And Zoom Text has a lot of functionality. It has a version where it will also speak as well as magnify, so if you want both.
Now, so if the machine in your lab is sitting there, when someone comes in that needs a lot of magnification, do you set it up for them first, or can they just go in and start it up?
Well, usually the very first time, you know, they're not sure what to do, so I'll show them what to do, and then if that's it, that's all they need, then they can come back in and work any time if they're a student. And if they need more instruction, then they can take a class or they can meet with me several times.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's low sight and such. Now let's do, what about when your hands are damaged and it's hard for it to type? How do you get stuff in the computer that way?
That's actually a huge growth area in terms of assistive technology because so many of us have been typing for so many years with poor ergonomic setups. You get repetitive strain injury or tendonitis or all kinds of things. And so what we do mostly there is work with speech recognition software, either Dragon Naturally Speaking, which now works very, very well, or in Vista, speech recognition is built into the operating system, so you don't have to buy a separate product.
What's it called?
It's called Vista Speech Recognition.
And is it good?
You know, it's pretty good for free, you know, for built-in. Yeah, absolutely. It's not Dragon Naturally Speaking, but it's good.
But is that just for navigation? Can you also actually type full paragraphs?
Absolutely. In fact, in my speech recognition class last week, we did a typing test.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, if you take a keyboarding class, if you can type 40 to 60 words a minute, that's good.
Right.
Most of my students were hitting 120 to 160 words a minute.
Speaking?
Yes.
Is that with errors accounted for?
Yes, you subtract the errors.
Wow. And is that with Vista or is that Dragon?
Well, we're using Dragon now. We do that for the first half, then we switch into Vista.
We get people that are listening to Geek Speak that are inventors and things of that sort, and sometimes I get calls about, you know, how good's the text recognition stuff, so that can I, you know, get rid of my monitor completely and do new things with the laptop. And one of the things I kind of talk about, Dragon's the one I always seem to talk about because I know a bit more about it. And one of the things that always is an issue is that you kind of need to have a Dragon has to tune to each user to some sort, like a user file, is what you call that?
Yes.
Is that still the case, and how long does it take to train Dragon to understand how you speak?
The new version of Dragon claims that you do not need to train a user file, actually. And I think this is exciting because I've thought, well, could we just have an instructor wear a microphone without training a user file and just dictate their lecture? But when I tested it myself, I found that the accuracy wasn't as high as I wanted. Of course, I'm used to high accuracy. I get 98-99% accuracy with a 10-minute training. Yeah.
Wow.
So I really don't care if I have to train for 10 minutes if I'm going to get great accuracy.
Do you speak as naturally as you're speaking now when you're talking to Dragon, or are you trying to be more spaces and more roboticness?
Well, you know what's funny is that in the Dragon training, they tell you to speak as though you are a newscaster. So they'll say, try to think in complete sentences and try to speak smoothly, but otherwise it's fine. And I get students who don't speak smoothly, but still have good recognition.
Is Dragon pretty expensive? Is that one of the reasons for your lab?
It is expensive. The version we use, Preferred, runs $160 to $200 a license.
Do you get a lot of people that have hand injuries or more permanent disabilities that buy it?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, or they get a funding source.
So do you get support from the company to get free or cheaper licenses?
Never happens. That'd be nice.
Nuance, if you're listening. In America, yeah. All right, well, we are speaking... We are speaking about assistive technology with Calais Engel, and we're going to take your calls with questions and comments about assistive technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. I'll give that contact information again in just a second. My name is Lyle Troxell. You're listening to My name is Lyle Troxell. Some people pronounce it Troxell. That doesn't matter that much. You're listening to Geek Speak on Central Coast Public Radio. The geeks today are Miles Elam. Miles?
Good morning.
But you already said good morning. Now you got to say hi or something. But okay.
Hi.
And Sean Cleveland.
Present.
And awake with coffee.
Yep.
And Kelly Engel is our guest. She teaches assistive technology classes and runs the assistive technology labs. Lab or labs?
Lab.
Lab at Cabrillo College. If you've got questions about using your computer for low sight capabilities, hand injuries, anything that you need your computer to be more assistive for you, and you want to have information about that, give us a call. That's what we're talking about today. Those are the calls and questions we'll be taking. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Imagine the Marx Brothers answering questions about cars. Picture Monty Python trying to imitate engine sounds. Mix that up with little Dr. Ruth and some Smothers Brothers, and you've got Car Talk. You can hear Click and Clack give their advice on cars every Saturday right after Geek Speak at 11 a.m. and Sunday morning at 9 a.m. right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. Again, we are taking questions and comments about assistive technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, 476-2800, or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. Kelly, when you're in this environment, how many people are using it? I mean, how many people come to your labs and use it?
Well, actually, when you asked lab or labs, it made me think. We don't provide assistive technology just in our 10-station lab. We provide it on the Aptos campus in its entirety, the Watsonville campus, and at Scotts Valley. Within classrooms and labs. And what we try to do is distribute that computing as much as possible. So we have licenses for our software all around campus, and then when we get a request, we move it. So it really depends. I have 10 students in a class, and I have 4 classes a semester, but I see many more students all around campus.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and in the library, too. Very popular there.
So this is being done everywhere?
Yes.
Does that mean you have to, is the tech support around the campus actually handle most installs for you and such?
They do quite a bit, yes, and I consult with them, or I'll go and I'll meet with a student, figure out what the student needs, and then sit down with the tech and say, okay, here's how we need to set this up.
All right, cool. Well, let's go ahead and take a call from Moss Landing. Bruce, welcome to Geek Speak. Hello,
yes,
Bruce.
Hi. Yes. Question I had is, and this is more for Kelly, but is with the rise of PDA is one of the whole issues has always been how small can you make a device and have a functional keyboard, and it seems a lot of the work that is being used to assist people that are have various impairments that they would be very much applicable to developing more sophisticated PDAs as well.
Personal data assistants, we're talking about like Palm Pilots and even cell phones. That
whatever
have
device, the, sure. The computer is really dependent on how small can you make the keyboard, you know,
right.
And yeah, it seems that a lot of this technology could be better adapted, but it hasn't been, it seems, you know, whether you're talking about an Apple iPhone or anything else.
Kelly, get...
I agree, and I think that's an area of growth that we're going to see, because you're starting to see adaptations on, say, cell phones, you know, large text and different size buttons and different adaptations. There are also PDAs that are specifically designed for people with disabilities. For example, Freedom Scientific makes one which speaks, which is designed for people who are blind.
Uh-huh.
So we'll see special niche market ones, as well as hopefully more adaptations within the mainstream commercial products.
And I'm assuming because that's a more specialized device, it's more expensive, unfortunately, because there's
not as much
people buying it.
Has anybody developed apps for iPhone?
Assistive apps?
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, you'd think that you'd be able to do that with an iPhone pretty well. Oh. Miles, we want to take a look? The App Store?
See about assistive? Once it becomes mainstream, the price goes down.
Yeah.
Exactly.
This is a lot of the speech synthesis chips, actually, the cost went down because they were being used in the Chatty Cathy dolls and so forth, but they were Texas Instruments DSP chips, so the cost came down for these other uses because they also had a mass market use.
Well, and I have to say we see a lot of carryover, too, where something which was just an assistive technology product really crosses over and becomes more of a mainstream product. From, if anybody remembers the really old Macs where the power switch was in the back.
Yeah.
But it wasn't accessible. And so they moved it to the front.
Yeah.
And now all the power buttons are on the front. From that sort of simple kind of design feature to things like whether or not you can get speech input or speech output on your cell phone.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Bruce, for the call.
You're welcome.
We'll go to Santa Cruz. Mike, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had a question about assistive technology for two-dimensional data and any kind of graphical data, stuff that's hard to describe with text. And are there any kinds of tactile displays that are emerging, or potentially using audioization of data sets that's emerging in your field?
I'm not sure what the computer is, but go ahead, answer that. Yeah.
Okay, well, in terms of tactile graphics, we produce tactile graphics in different ways. For example, in print, you can draw a diagram and run it through a machine like Pictures in a Flash, which will raise that picture if you're using thermographic paper. And that way you can create, say, a map of the college that a person can feel. But in terms of a screen, which is tactile, we don't have that yet. There have been different things that have been tried, like with gaming mice and stuff.
I'm not really familiar with the experience of being blind, but is graphical representation or tactile representation of like a map something that works for someone that doesn't have sight?
Yes, it can.
Okay. Yeah. So you're still able without sight to say, well, here is a small representation, a map, like for example, and therefore now I understand better where my space is.
Absolutely.
Really interesting. Of course. I mean, I guess that makes sense perfectly. So you're saying that right now we don't have any displays that do that kind of feedback, so you can just touch the monitor kind of thing and actually have bumps to represent.
No, but that would be fantastic.
It should be coming. I mean, in some sense, because there's touch screens that definitely have haptic feedback. And so it would be kind of interesting to see if that's actually...
But graphics are a huge problem for people who are blind.
Is there any interest in using audioization of... let's say a time series or some kind of, if someone were interested in the fluctuations in the stock market. And
do some kind of representation of that orally rather than graphically. You know, there's a bit of that in the art world, in the digital art world, the idea of I've got a large data set and I want to kind of somehow have an understanding of it. And there's been a few art projects that kind of take that data set and make music or make effects of it. And it's an ambient kind of thing. So a bad example would be if the stock market is very volatile, the music might be a little more atonal. So you'd feel a little strange listening to it. And that would be kind of representing the market being atonal. I think everybody recently would be turning that art project off because it would drive them insane. But so there is a little bit of that. But I think in some sense, we're that good at kind of representing data in music.
No, mostly we look at a text alternative.
Yeah, definitely.
It's an interesting question.
Definitely.
What kinds of cognitive processes can adapt to different modalities?
Yeah.
And great, thanks a lot.
Hey, thanks, Mike, for the call.
Thank you.
We'll go ahead and go to SoCal. D, welcome to Geek Speak.
Yeah, I have a question about Mac applications. Like, when, where, why, how are they not? Are they developing more? And if you're familiar with, I believe it's Otherworld Computing has a device, Axiom. It's like a tablet that's a computer completely... a computer that you can write on.
So a tablet PC, is that a Macintosh modification? No, it's a Windows?
Yes.
Let me just say from this perspective, I work in the arts division kind of at UCSC, and we are almost all Macintosh place. And the one exception to that is people that have sight needs, different kinds of sight needs. And we use Windows machines. Kelly, are you seeing that same thing?
Yeah, it's primarily PC, Windows PCs.
Yeah, there is quite a bit of support built into the OS X operating system. Mm-hmm. One of the things that, of course, is difficult is that any time you change between computers, everyone knows that it's a learning experience, and almost everything designed as a default is visual on a computer. So when you switch from your experience in a Windows environment with Dragon, Naturally Speaking, and JAWS, and you then switch to a Mac with anything else, that is a big transition leap, much more so than I think most people switching between two operating systems with sight. So moving the user base that's already on Windows right now into the Mac environment is a challenge. And, of course, Apple, it's not a large market share for them, so why would they care to some degree? So I think there's a bit of that. I always recommend people that have need to hear stuff and need to not use their hands for typing to be on a Windows machine. And, Kelly, do you see people with Macintosh coming to your lab to get help?
Yeah, sometimes I do. There are some versions of assistive technology products which are available for the Mac. For example, Kurzweil 3000, which is a text-to-speech program. It also supports student learning in several ways. But that Kurzweil version doesn't have as many features as the PC version. Mm-hmm. And this is what I'm noticing, is that with Macs, Apple's a little later kind of coming to assistive technology,
yeah,
you know, than Windows.
Okay.
Thank you, Dee, for the call.
Sure.
Well, let's go ahead and go to Gilroy now. Garlic capital of the world. Daniel, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Speaking. Hold on 1 second. yeah.
What's your question?
My name's Dan, and what I was curious to know, after living with a wife that was handicapped for many years, and she passed last October, we're in the process right now of developing a store for the different modalities of people with varying handicaps. And I'm trying to find, get some more information. The conversation and the topic today quite interests me for something that we could place into our facility. Is there any more contact available with these folks?
What do you mean contact?
Well, as far
with
as
our guest?
some of this adaptive technology, and what kind of tech support do they have?
Mm. In the world, yeah. Kelly, that's a pretty good. I think what Dan is kind of asking is it, let's say you're blind and you get a computer, and at that stage, what do you do after that? Like, what happens when you get a virus and all these other issues that come? Calling GeekSpeak doesn't help because we're idiots when it comes to the subject. But where do people go?
Well, usually they start looking around for somebody who understands their assistive technology and understands, you know, their issue with viruses or whatever that is.
Does that mean you get a lot of sideline calls from people saying, help, I don't go to Cabrillo, but I need help?
Yes.
Uh-huh. So it sounds like Dan might have a market here if he opens a support center.
I would think that would be true, yes.
Could you see, do you think it's difficult to build out a computer? I mean, I notice you have an extremely large laptop screen. I'm assuming that's because that screen... You need screen real estate when you have low light, low sight, or what do you call it? Sight impaired?
Well, or people with low vision.
Low vision, yeah. So that's an assumption that machine is preferred for a user. So could you imagine a situation where, I mean, is it difficult to get a computer together from Fry's or from, you know, Best Buy that actually has the stuff you need in it?
No, because you can buy, you know, a different monitor, different computer, so get a good deal on the tower, let's say, and then your monitor you buy separately, get the size that you need.
Same kind of complexities everybody has when buying a computer.
Yeah,
sure.
Just the same.
Okay.
And then you have to add your AT on top of that.
But a service center of kind of installing the software or fixing it and understanding JAWS and making sure that the service center doesn't break the system in some sense is an important feature, important service.
I have to say probably a third of the people who take my introductory class do it because they want to know how to take care of their computers at home.
Yeah, makes sense. Dan, thanks for the call.
As far as the JAWS is concerned, is that programming available in the open market today?
Sure.
Yeah, you can buy it.
Yeah.
Where would you locate it?
FreedomScientific.com.
And you can do a search for JAWS with a Z at the end, right?
Oh, no, J-A-W-S.
J-A-W-S, all uppercase. Google First Hits will be the application. It's a very popular application.
Hey, what was the name of the other name she gave us?
Yeah, the screen magnification system you're using?
Oh, Zoom Text.
Zoom Text.
Zoom Text is AI squared.
We'll get Zoom Text and JAWS links up on the GeekSpeak website right after the show. Thank you very much, Dan, for the call.
Thank you.
From Soquel, California, Mark, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you so much. Hi, Kelly. My question is about universal design, and is universal design blurring the line between products being developed for general consumption and those developed specifically for people with disabilities? Thank you so much. I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay.
Well, universal design is the idea that a product is designed to work for everyone who's going to be purchasing it and using it as much as possible. And that is true. Like I was saying with cell phones, where you can have an option for larger text, that's something that we're seeing. Or on my Windows Vista laptop here, I can change the default dots per inch so that I can have it a little bit bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Those kinds of options.
So what we're talking about is you design the product in the beginning to make sure it works for everybody. And that's an example of why Vista and OS X, Macintosh OS X, both have support for sight-impaired people built into OS.
Yes.
That kind of idea that you're not going to buy a special product. You're going to buy the same product, and it will work for you.
And it will, although usually those built-in modifications have a lot of limitations. And so people will start with that, and then they'll eventually buy a more complex product that has more options.
Mm-hmm. We are speaking with Callie Engel. She teaches assistive technology classes and directs the assistive technology lab at Cabrillo College. You're welcome to call us and ask us questions about assistive technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. My name is Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning are Sean Cleland and Miles Elam. You have a question?
I did some quick research with regard to the Apple iPhone, and I don't see much in the way of technology for assistive technologies. I think that may also be a function of the fact that the iPhone is a small device. You don't have that much visual area.
Mm-hmm.
It is merely a touchscreen that doesn't have any
tactile feedback.
Right, exactly. There's no tactile feedback, and there's no actual physical features to the phone. It's
right.
a straight plate of glass except for the bottom button.
How about microphone?
Speech output?
It has a mic. And you can do dictation, but there's no voice recognition.
There's a service called EveryNote, which will, once you set it up on your phone, you can record a message and it will go up to the server and then be stored. And there's also Jot.com.
Right, but you have to get to the application, download it, run it, and all of that requires some visual acuity.
Right, but you could use one of the closed caption camera things you have in your lab. Can you describe that?
Okay, well, that's a camera head which points down onto a tray where you put your piece of paper or your telephone or your finger with a
anything
splinter in it.
Anything you want to see.
Yeah, anything you want to see. And then it's magnified and it's displayed on a television screen that's in front of you. So,
basically a macro camera. It's like a microscope kind of thing, but big display.
Bigger.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
It sounds very security-like, closed caption. So is that used a lot for people coming in with a Xerox handout? They'll put it in there and they'll start reading
it? Right, they'll come in, they'll say, I've got a syllabus here, I can't see it. I'll say, well, let's put it on the CCTV and see what's going on here. Or to take a test or, you know, because this is in an educational environment.
So in the educational environment, a faculty member runs a Xerox of their syllabus and hands it out to the class the first day. Isn't that right out kind of saying some people can use this and some people can't, and shouldn't it be done in a different form?
Well, a lot of instructors will put them up on their websites, so that way you could change the text size right there if you download it, put it in Word. But also, you can take that print and you can scan it in my lab or many places around campus and then change the text size yourself after you've scanned it, or you could use the closed-circuit television to magnify it.
Very cool.
So, no, it's true. You know, print in size 12 is not necessarily that accessible for a person with low vision, but we've designed it in place so that people can make it accessible.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's go ahead and go again to Santa Cruz. You're welcome to call us. There's not very many people waiting right now. Phone numbers are 476-2800. We're talking about assistive technology. Timothy in Santa Cruz, welcome to GeekSpeak.
I've got two questions. One is if Dragon Naturally Speaking can be used for pre-recorded talks to transcribe them. And also, if she was familiar with the system that Klaus Knopper is developing for assistive technology. He's the developer of Knopix.
Your first question, I'm sorry, was what?
Whether Dragon Naturally Speaking can be used on, say, like a recorded audio.
Okay.
Like an MP3.
Yeah, I get this a lot, right? Somebody goes into a speech, they record the whole thing, and they say, can I turn this into text? And that's the whole Dragon needs to be trained, but maybe it doesn't. So is that functional?
Not very. I've tried it, and what I've found is that the recognition isn't very good, unfortunately. Although you could do it, and especially if you have the permission of the speaker, that would be important, and then fix it, so it might be better than nothing. But what I find is it's so much better if you can get that speaker to come for 10 minutes and train a voice file on the computer.
Even after the fact?
Well, sure, and then transcribe their speech.
Okay, so here's a question for you. Normally when you do a training, and this would work for this, we'll get to your other question in just a second. You have to train it first, and you normally have to read a couple paragraphs of text.
Mm-hmm.
Can you change what that text is?
No.
It's so frustrating.
And it's especially difficult if you've got low vision, because you might not be able to read that text.
Right.
So what we end up doing is printing it and magnifying it.
Yeah, because the reason I was asking, of course, is if you have a three-hour speech from someone recorded audio, and you type in the first hour and you use that as your definition file, then it does the rest. But they do something special, and this
they do.
That's really a shame that it doesn't work that way. Okay, the second question was about Klaus Knopper. Is that the correct pronunciation?
Yeah,
Timothy.
K N O P P E R. He's the developer of Knopix, the live CD. Miles should know about that.
Yeah, the original live CD.
What's that?
Yeah,
putting a CD into your computer and booting a complete operating system off of it instead of installing it onto your hard drive first.
And apparently his latest project, it's called Adrian or Ariadne, but it's for assistive technology. He's trying to develop this for Knopix more.
No, but it sounds interesting.
Well,
check it out. We'll have to look into it. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
I got a few links from it. It was an easy Google find, so we'll have to educate ourselves about that. Let's go ahead and go to Pacific Grove. Rosemary, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, how are you?
Quite well. Can you speak up a little bit, Rosemary?
Yes.
What's your question?
Yes. Well, I need, let's see, I have difficulty using my hands, and especially like using a mouse. I have a hand-me-down computer from someone.
Mm-hmm.
I looked into the Dragon Naturally Speaking program so they could talk instead of, type.
Mm-hmm.
And my computer doesn't have enough. It's not.
It's not fast enough?
Yeah. So what I'm thinking is that probably easier for me would be to have a laptop and the Dragon Naturally Speaking program that goes with that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's one of the high reasons for something that does voice navigation.
If you want to keep the computer you have now, you might try adding a trackball instead of a mouse or some other alternate input. But if you've decided, you know what, time for a new computer, then you do want to get a computer that's got enough RAM to run Dragon well and comfortably, because it is a big hog, and then it will run.
So the Dragon requirements, do you know them off the top of your head, or are you now new machines are fine, so you don't have to keep track of that?
Generally, it's fine, but I wouldn't go below 512 megabytes.
Okay, so it's possible that her improvement of RAM might just do it, which is really cheap right now. Mm-hmm. Is it a laptop that you're using?
No, Rosemary? It's not.
Well, then you could probably
get... it's about 8 or 10 years old.
Yeah, it might be precedent.
Yeah, it might be time for a new computer.
Yeah, it might be. There's also other input devices. John Bornstad, who runs the Sioux Center, has a system that uses a mouse that you don't have to use your hands at all. It uses a tracking system on the head. Do you know about Sioux Center and that system?
Well, and we have a head tracker.
You do?
Yeah.
And it's kind of expensive. I mean, mm-hmm. I would say it's almost $100.
There are also foot mice, which are less expensive.
Oh, foot mice. So is it like a big pad that you put both your feet on?
It kind of moves around?
So there you go. You could be dancing a little bit when you work on your computer. Rosemary, thank you for the call.
The problem is I can't afford any of
that stuff, right? Well, that definitely is a problem. There's another thing. You're using Windows. There's a lot of stuff you can do with the keyboard. If that's a lot more of a help to you, you can actually navigate the keyboard quite a bit. I'm good enough. I mean, theoretically, if you get good enough, you don't need to use the mouse. You can use Windows without the mouse. Uh-huh. And there's different ways to do that. You can actually switch the mouse to be controlled by the arrow keys with a command. And do you train that stuff? Do you train that stuff in your center?
mm-hmm.
So you could go to the assistive lab, take a course with Calais and learn a bit about how you can make your machine the most effective possible. Is that something you provide?
Yes, and also I meet with members of the community if they call and ask for an appointment so that we can just discuss assistive technology.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So give her a call.
Can you give me the phone number?
Do you want to give your information? We have links from the website. Mm-hmm. If you can get to the GeekSpeak website, you can get to her labs. But it's the Cabrillo College Assistive Technology Labs.
Mm-hmm.
So cabrillo.edu.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much, Rosemary. Bye-bye.
And we had an online email. Mm-hmm. Not online email. Isn't that redundant? an email from a listener asking about assistive technology in gaming.
Right, because that's another time when you're using the mouse a lot.
I actually did some quick research and came across a site that has some video blogs about, for example, Mike Phillips, a gamer, freelance technology writer, who was born with spinal muscular atrophy. And he's able to play World of Warcraft Unreal Tournament 2004 and like with just his thumb, a proximity switch.
So there are tools for it. So Miles, but I don't want to crash your iPhone, but could you add that to the news list for today's show?
Yeah, you're going
to
crash my iPhone.
It is what it is, man. You got to do it for the good of humanity.
But I've seen these mind link devices that you're supposed to be able to wear on your head and control your mouse and play games. I've never tried one.
The computers are going to take over.
Yeah, OCZ makes a neural impulse actuator, but they say it works with the mouse. They designed it for gaming.
So it replaces the mouse?
No, it works in conjunction with a mouse.
Okay.
That's how they designed it.
Mm-hmm. So you still have to have some movement in your hands.
Sounds like it.
Again from Pacific Grove, Diane, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Yeah, hi. I was just wondering, I publish an email newsletter called New Resources in Aging, And was one, and I would like to actually, I'm going to actually make a link to this program for people who work with older adults. And I'm wondering if you have anything specifically geared to older adults, and or are you putting or encouraging people to put this kind of assistive technology into places like nursing homes, assisted living, where, you know, older people live, and are, do you do any kind of work with that population?
You know, I have been asked to in the past, and I did work with one particular skilled care facility to set up an assistive technology system with Dragon Naturally Speaking, specifically for their residents who have multiple sclerosis.
Uh-huh.
And I also get a number of older adults in my classes because they want a course where they can learn about assistive technology and also learn about how to use a computer at the same time. And that's something mm-hmm. that I do in the introductory course.
Right, because you don't have a computer. You need to learn this at the same time.
Exactly.
Definitely.
It would be great to post that class in my newsletter.
Yep.
This is a Bay Area thing.
Sure, send me an email.
Yeah, okay, we'll do that.
Diane,
okay,
thank you for the call.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Bye-bye. So we're talking about assistive technology, and the reason why we did this show is because a caller last week wanted to know about, you know, is Vista ready for it? What do you think? You're running Vista on that machine, but you also do a boot. What do you think?
If you're using XP and it's working well for you, I would say stick with it because JAWS is a very complicated program to use anyway, and if you're using JAWS with XP and it's working for you, great. If you need to upgrade to a Vista system for some particular reason, it does work, and the new JAWS version, JAWS 10, works especially well.
Okay, so buying a new machine, you can stay with Vista, but you might want to get JAWS 10.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is going to work, the Zoom application, and
yeah.
you might not need to get Dragon because there's built into Vista.
Right.
Thank you so much for that information. Calais is the assistive technology instructor at Cabrillo College. She also runs the labs. It's Calais Engel. And you can find out more by going to geekspeak.org and clicking on her lab links. We'll have more links as Miles' iPhone reboots. She's an important advocate for technology needs to students with disabilities, from technology accommodations to web accessibility. And one of the things that you told me in the past is that you're able to kind of check out websites with assistive technology tools and kind of give feedback to people because you want people to make better websites. Are you still offering that to some degree?
I do that. If people come in and they want to take a look at their website using JAWS or ZoomText or any of our products, see how it works, and discuss what the user experience would be like for a person with different kinds of disabilities, we do that. I also present in our digital media classes at Cabrillo with web developers, well, training web developers.
To be better.
To talk about it,
yeah.
And the most common thing we talk about are alt tags.
Calais Engel, thank you so much for being here on GeekSpeak today.
It was my pleasure.
GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission. Broadcasting HD Radio on 88.9 FM, this is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Arto. Streaming and podcasting at kusp.org. GeekSpeak on KUSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. My name's Lyle Troxell. The Geeks today were Sean Cleveland. Sean, thanks for being here today.
Yeah, thank you.
Miles Elam.
Always a pleasure.
Calais Engel is our guest. Calais, this was a great experience. I hope to kind of be involved a little bit more with your labs because I'd really like to see how they work, and I'd love to come by and take a look at your students working in that environment.
That would be wonderful.
And thanks also to being such a good community advocate of taking your time outside of your work to help people out. I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
A lot of people do. You can, of course, ask us questions all throughout the week at geekspeak.org. We have a wonderful forums run by our Southern Geek Alex Sleas.
Our Southern California correspondent.
There you go. Thank you very much.
Our Alex geek Sleas. At large.
And Rick Philman also produced the show today and also answers our phones for us. Thank you, Rick, very much. For GeekSpeak and KSP, I'm Lyle Troxell. See you next week.